It's at the letters for Thursday, May 23rd, 2024. Arden Zwell and Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thank you so much for listening. Ben, we did this last week, so we might as well do it again. Just recap what has happened in the week since we spoke, because last time when we recapped what had happened in the week since we spoke, the Blue Jays were like 2-3. I think they had played one game below 500. That was not good. What they've done in the week since is they've gone 3-3. So they basically, they've stayed right where they were. So this is better, I suppose, than the week between our last couple of episodes, but it's really still not good enough for this team to start moving in the opposite direction and getting to where it's trying to go.
That's right. Yeah, it's a team that needs to go on a real run, and maybe the series win against the White Sox, which was their first series win since April, maybe that sparks them in the right direction. I mean, you have to take advantage of inferior teams like the White Sox when you play them, and the Blue Jays, to some small extent, did that with the series win to nudge them in the right direction. But you look at the playoff odds, I have them in front of me right now as we record this on Thursday, and they're just a hair under 20%. So that tells you they have a ton of work to do. Those playoff odds aren't everything, but they are pretty significant for any major league front office, and they are not in a good place right now.
Yeah, you mentioned it. The first series win in a month, and a month is a really long period of time. Like, that is an extreme stretch to go without winning a series if you consider yourself a playoff contender. So we can kind of zoom out and like open the sample a little bit and just look at what happened over that month. We're sitting here on May 23rd. So if we go back to April 23rd, 23rd to 23rd, April to May, what's happened? The Blue Jays have gone 9-16. They've been outscored 118-91. That is a negative 27 run differential. That is the fourth worst run differential across baseball over that span. That 9-16 record, that is a 360 winning percentage. That is the third worst winning percentage in baseball over that span. The Blue Jays have scored 3.6 runs per game. They have allowed 4.7 runs per game over the last month. They have a 651 OPS as a team. They have a 425 ERA as a team, and this is maybe like the biggest one, they have allowed 28 home runs and hit only 19. That has to be the worst month of the season. It has to be. You cannot do that again. If you have another 30-day span like that, forget about it. It's over. See you in 2025. Like, the Blue Jays absolutely have to have that be the worst 30-game stretch of their 2024 season. They have to play better going forward. There is no other option.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, there's really, they've burned enough losses at this point. I mean, you look at their record right now, 26 losses. If you're going to win 90 games, you can only lose 72. So they've burned, more than a third of the games that they can lose in this season. And yeah, it's time now to turn it around, to build momentum off of that series against the White Sox. Now they're in Detroit to play the Tigers. I'm here in Detroit as we record this right now for four against a Tigers team that can pitch but can't hit, and then more against the White Sox. So, you know, there's a chance. Yeah. Oh, there are some similarities for sure. I mean, there definitely are. And I think that the Jays also missed Tarik Skubal, who's arguably the best pitcher in the American League. I say arguably. I'm not saying that he definitively is, but I think you could make a case. So missing him is a good thing. It looks like they might miss Paul Skenes and Jared Jones of the Pirates as well when they play them in a little bit. So you have to take advantage of these little breaks when you get them, and these soft pockets in the schedule when you get them, because there just aren't a lot of them. And we talked about the schedule last week, but you don't get a ton of chances. So this is the time that they have to build some momentum. They just have to get to 500. Like, I understand it doesn't happen overnight, but you can't spend another 6 weeks trying to get to 500. Like, get there fast, then build, and then see what happens.
Yeah, the bare minimum is just beating up on the White Sox and the Tigers and winning against the Pirates, and the Blue Jays going to go to Oakland soon. Like, they need to take at least two there, if not a series sweep against a, you know, an A's team that was playing above its head earlier this year but is coming back down to earth. You mentioned the playoff odds. So over the last month, right, April 23rd to May 23rd, that span that I was looking at earlier, the Blue Jays playoff odds went from above 50%, they were 54.6, to, as you said today, below 20%. Like, that just shows you the damage that has happened in that span. No other team has seen its playoff odds decrease by as much. And if you kind of shift over to another page on Fangraphs and you look at how they project the rest of the Blue Jays season to go, so this is objective, this is based on a blend of, you know, zips and steamer, and, you know, some estimations on what playing time is going to look like, Fangraphs projects the Blue Jays to have a winning record the rest of the way, 59 and 55, but that's only going to be good enough to get them to 81 and 81. And those projections bake in the Blue Jays playing well against the Tigers and playing well against the White Sox. Like, play that is baked in. Like, if you take 3 or 4 against the Tigers and 2 and 1 in Chicago next week, that's the expectation of these projections. Like, that's not going to be like, oh, now we're shifting them upwards, because those projections take into account the talent of the Tigers and the projections of the White Sox, and they say, okay, we should expect the Blue Jays to win these games. Like, where the Blue Jays are really going to need to make up their ground in the standings is when they play the Orioles next, and when they play the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Mariners. Like, when they play better teams, like, they're going to need to overperform, outperform their expectations against quality opposition. Like, that's where they make up the ground. So that's why this stretch is, like, so important to not have a lull here and not have a lapse here, because if the Blue Jays go on this road trip through Detroit and Chicago, 7 games, and they go like 2 and 5, like, that's gonna really submarine their expectations going forward. Like, you know, 4 and 3, 5 and 2, that has to be the bare minimum on this road trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're going to need bats to do it. I mean, we saw an offensive, you know, mini resurgence against the White Sox.
Bichette sends one to deep center. Gone! And it is their biggest inning of the season, and it all happened with 2 outs.
On Wednesday, featuring the home run jacket, it's back. We'll see what this means for the entire season with the Jays here, and we can get to that if we want to later. But yeah, ultimately, you've got to hit. You've got to hit, because it's funny. You look at Major League Baseball right now, and just as a league, which is important context as we're discussing any team, but including the Blue Jays, as a league, it just has been a very, very difficult offensive environment so far. Pitchers have been amazing. You have hitters hitting 240 with a 311 on base with a 387 slug. So that has been the offensive environment. Now, it is ticking up, and it will continue to tick up as the weather heats up and the ball travels a little bit better. But the Jays, great. You have good pitching. So do a lot of teams. I mean, the Yankees have Luis Hill and Clark Schmidt and Nestor Cortez having these amazing seasons. Like, they're not the Blue Jays aren't the only team with good pitching. They have to find a way to find some offensive production from a group that's been so underwhelming this season. And, you know, even with Vladdy, you know, having this incredible month where he's hitting whatever it is, 360 in May, you look at his slugging percentage for the season, it's still in the 380s, you know, like, to take nothing away from what he's done for the last month. Like, and he's not even the biggest problem on this team offensively or close to it. But they need some guys to actually, someone beyond Davis Schneider, to come out there and really produce offensively.
Haven't been able to take shortcuts, but this one is hit deep to left, and the lead is cut in half. Davis Schneider goes yard.
Did you have a jacket take that you wanted to get out into the ether there? Is that, you want to do that now?
Let's do it. I don't have much of a home run jacket take. I think it's interesting. I find it very interesting because, you know, it was around for a couple of years. It was a big part of their identity publicly around the league. It was the fun Blue Jays with their home run jacket. You can't stop them. And then you stop the offense. The jacket disappeared for a while. obviously that's something that the players have discussed and the players have given a lot of thought to, and it matters to them whether they have the jacket or not. And, you know, clearly it is not for me to say whether they should have the jacket or not. It is their dugout, their home run celebration. You know, do what you want to do. But I do find it interesting that they have the home run jacket back. I think, I mean, to state the obvious, I don't think that this is going to make or break their season. There are a lot bigger factors than whether they decide to enjoy home runs by donning a certain garment of clothing. And so, yeah, it's really up to them. But it's I find it interesting to see the jacket return.
Yeah, I don't have a take on the home run jacket, but I do have a take on home runs. And that is that the Blue Jays really need to start hitting some more of them, and particularly their core needs to start hitting some more of them. Like, you've gotten great power production out of Danny Jansen in the very short amount of time that he's had since he returned from the IL. Like, it's probably around 82, 85 plate appearances at this point. But you got guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette and George Springer who have twice as many plate appearances, if not more, and have fewer home runs than Danny Jansen. Like, that is a massive problem. I pulled this for the broadcast before Bo went deep on Wednesday. So, and I haven't like had time to update these. So, you know, it's one more home run from these three guys since I pulled these numbers. But I think that, you know, the point still stands. Through the first 47 games this year, Vlad, Bo, George, 9 home runs combined. Through the first 47 games last season, those three had 22 homers. And through the first 47 games in 2022, they had 25. So you go from 25 to 22 to 9 this year. So you think about that reduction of like 13 home runs from last year to this year through this point in the season. I mean, if you just bake in solo homers, like add 13 to your run differential, but they're not all going to be solo homers. Like, some of them are going to be 2-run shots and some of them are going to be 3-run shots. Like, that, just getting the same amount of power production from those threes you had last year this year, I think would just meaningfully change the Blue Jays record. And like, we're probably talking about a 500 team, if not a better than 500 team. Like, as we sit here right now today, with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. having hit 4 home runs this year, there are 141 hitters in MLB who have more home runs than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And then you get Springer and Bichette having hit 3. There are 179 hitters in this league with more home runs than George Springer and Bo Bichette. Like, as long as that remains consistent. So these guys have what now, 10 through 48 games. So on pace for 36 collectively, somewhere around there. Like, you need 36 out of Vlad alone. Like, this is that, yeah. As long as that continues, like, the Blue Jays are going to continue to have trouble scoring runs. Like, it is the biggest thing for me, is they are just losing the home run battle across the board all season.
Right. And it's one thing to say home runs are down, which they are, but they're not down to this extent across the league. I mean, you look at, so those three names, they've combined for 583 plate appearances this season. And so that's about what you would give one player in the course of a season, 10 home runs total. Like, it's just like, it's a shockingly, shockingly low amount of home run production from those three players. It is really, for those guys to be healthy and to have played basically every day, and, you know, I know Springer's battled this virus and, you know, who knows what dings and dents, but they've been good enough to play every single day, and they have 10 home runs in 583 plate appearances. That would be bad if you were like a fourth outfielder, you know, like if you're a part-time, you know, platoon bat, or if you're a middle infielder. Like, this is, backup catchers hit more home runs than that. And it's not like they're doing a lot of other stuff that's not home runs. I mean, Vladdy has, to his credit, he has hit a lot of singles.
And a base hit into left for Guerrero. And that'll bring home another run and make it 5-0.
And singles are good. I don't mean that as like a backhanded compliment. Singles are great. But so those players are accountable for it. You know, clearly this management team finally, you know, acknowledged the struggles of Springer by moving him down in the lineup, which I, you know, thought was too late, but is the right call for this moment in time for him to be hitting lower. And it just allows you to be a bit more nimble and flexible at the top. And so if that means Danny Jansen hits higher for a couple games, great. Dalton Varsho, Vladdy obviously is going to be up there. You have David Schneider really producing in the leadoff spot. Great. But yeah, you know, they need more from those three. That's been the case all year now.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays, just one of the lowest percentage of runs scored via home run in baseball, just 33%. That is the fifth lowest in baseball. Now, the lowest in baseball is actually the Detroit Tigers, who you're going to see this weekend, Ben. They're at 28.2%. But, you know, I raise this number because, like, this is a number that is very impactful in the postseason, especially. I remember us talking about it last year going into the playoffs because, like, the Mariners were one of the top teams in baseball last year in terms of percentage of runs scored via home run, and lo and behold, there they are near the top again this year. They're number three in baseball, 48.2% of their runs scored via homer. New York Yankees there at number two with over 50%. This is what plays in the postseason. And I think that increasingly it's what plays in the regular season, just in the context of the offensive environment that you were citing earlier. It is harder than ever to string hits together. Like, it is very rare that you see the kind of seven run rally that the Blue Jays put up with two outs in the second inning on Wednesday against, you know, obviously not a great pitcher in Nick Nastrini. You know, they weren't doing that against Garrett Crochet, but you know, you face Nick Nastrini, who is in AAA, a week prior, and you know, has like a 12 ERA to start his big league career. You can do something like that, but you don't face too many Nick Nastrinis. You face that guy when you're playing the White Sox, but when you're playing the Mariners or the Yankees or the Orioles or even the Red Sox or especially the Rays, like, you just don't face that caliber of pitching. It's a lot tougher to string together hits. So it's more important than ever now, I think, to hit homers and to do damage with the long ball. And the Blue Jays have just really struggled to do it this year. Even if they do sneak into the playoffs, still performing offensively as they are now with such a low reliance on the home run, I'm not going to have great expectations for them in the postseason, because that's where you really need to hit homers and you really need to win the home run battle. And that's just not something that we've seen the Blue Jays do.
Yeah, they're a long way from that. If they get there, if they somehow make the playoffs this year, man. I mean, and look, stranger
and
things
the goal.
Have happened.
I mean, that's what they're trying to do, Ben, you know?
And it should be the goal. Like, it's an appropriate goal. Like, it's May. As much as, you know, we do have a real sample of this team, it's not a good sample. I really don't think this is a good offensive team, but it's still May. Like, things can sort of shift. You know, Ross Atkins addressed this team for the first time since the home opener over the weekend at Rogers Center, and he was talking a lot about prospects. And, you know, I wonder what you think about, you know, the possibility of some of these prospects impacting the Blue Jays offensively, either by coming up and getting some playing time and producing, or as a trade chip, because it's you know, it's still May again, so it's not exactly like prime time for trades. But I found it interesting that Ross kept going back to those prospects a few times, and I wonder what you made of that.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple ways that could happen. Like, that could happen near term with all right, we are reducing the playing time of, you know, a struggling veteran. Like, okay, like, Justin Turner, you're not going to play as much going forward. Or, hey, Kevin Kiermaier, you're not going to see as many reps going forward.
Even Springer, it's possible. Yep.
Hey, George Springer, your plate appearances are going to be lessened. I mean, we're just going based off of the performance that we've seen to this point. Like, hey, Ernie Clement, like, you were a great story coming out of camp, but we gave you a lot of run and kept making errors and didn't hit well enough, so we had to move another direction. Hey, Daniel Vogelbach, you had one great game and that was wonderful. We all like seeing it from you, but we gave you a bunch of opportunities and now we are forced into doing something with a bit more urgency than we were earlier this year. And so then that's how you'd get an Aurelvis Martinez, perhaps, sneaking his way onto this roster, a Spencer Horwitz and Addison Barger. That's the one way in the near term. I think we could also see some prospect activity in another way in the longer term, where it's like, hey, Stuart Baroa is putting the home run jacket on Leo Jimenez in mid-August because those guys are playing every day because other players have been traded. So yeah, I think that one way or the other, we're going to see some of these players from AAA impacting the Blue
Stuart
Jays this
Baroa.
Year.
Oh man.
I mean,
that is,
he's having a nice year, Ben, and the Blue Jays really like him. He plays a great center field. Steals a bunch of bases. He's actually your kind of guy. Like, you love the burners. Like, steal bases. You'd love Stuart Baroa. High energy guy. Fans are going to love this guy when he's playing every day in September. Trust me.
No, you don't have to sell me on Stuart Baroa. It's nothing against Stuart Baroa. Believe me, I've looked at the numbers. I've heard good things about him, too.
Swinging a high drive to left field. Going back, Polensky. Looking up. It's gone. First home run of the spring for Stuart Baroa. And the Blue Jays lead.
It's not a knock on him. It's just like, you know, the Yankees are out here talking about Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. And the Blue Jays are talking about Stuart Baroa. Oh, man, it's a tough one, you know. And I'm not saying, they obviously, I don't mean to make light of it. Maybe we should cut this. I don't know. But
no,
we
will.
Sad.
We will be talking about him in September, I think, with the way things are going now. Like, if the Blue Jays don't go on a run here. I mean, the Blue Jays certainly hope not, but I mean, this, like, what they have is what they have, right? Like, that much was clear from, you know, talking to Ross. Like, there's no savior coming here, right? And I don't think that there's about to be some sort of like a franchise altering trade that brings in like a win now impact talent in the short term. I think the Blue Jays core, like their offense, their lineup, like, this is what it is. Like, there's no one coming to save the day. Like, even, you know, if they get Joey Votto up to the big leagues at some point, like, he's not saving the day. He's not going to show up and, you know, hit 10 home runs in a month. Like, it really comes down to George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette playing better, Alejandro Kirk to a certain extent as well, doing more offensively than he has to this point. Like, look, Danny Jansen has been full value since he's come off the IL, but obviously you can't play that guy every day. He just came off the IL, and like, I don't need to reiterate the injury history there for anyone. He plays the most demanding physical position on the diamond, so he has to have his days off. Davis Schneider has been very impressive this year, carrying over the success from last year and making a bunch of adjustments and turning himself into like a legitimate leadoff hitter. But you need more good stories like that. Like, you need something closer to Justin Turner's April when he had like a 900 OPS, and a lot less of Justin Turner's May when he's got like a 200 OPS. Like, you just need more from what you have in-house, because even if you do kind of force a Spencer Horwitz or an Aurelvis Martinez onto this roster, I don't think it's going to really change your win expectancy, your run expectancy dramatically. It really does come down to your core playing up to its potential.
There's something about that image of Stuart Baroa having the home run jacket put on him by Leo Jimenez that I don't know. It really tells you how differently this thing could go. And the Jays are still holding on to the hope, of course, that they can really turn this around in the right direction. And who knows, maybe they can. I think that, you know, you're right to point to the veteran contributors on this team, a group that now includes Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. It's interesting too with guys who are getting older, like a George Springer or like a Justin Turner, and specifically how pitchers are attacking them, and even more specifically how they do against four-seam fastballs. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, Arden, that the results have not been good for those two guys against four-seamers this season. George Springer has a weighted on base of 284 against four-seam fastballs. Justin Turner, a weighted on base of 270 against four-seam fastballs. Turner hitting 122 against four-seamers this year. So if you're an opposing team and you have a pitcher with even a halfway decent fastball, attack those guys. Like, make them prove that they can do damage on that pitch. And I know it's not that simple, and these are smart hitters and experienced hitters, and maybe they shorten up and, you know, hit one into the outfield for a solid single, and that's a productive at bat. But yeah, it is a ruthless league. And so I think that when you look at the possibility of reinforcements from the minor leagues, I don't really see a trade being a short-term switch for this ball club, as much as Ross Atkins did talk about that. I think that more likely, you know, those trades would happen later into July. Atkins described the Blue Jays as a team that would like to buy and maybe, you know, would look for, you know, would that be a left-handed hitting outfielder or infielder, someone to bolster this lineup now? I don't see it happening. I'm not holding my breath for that possibility.
Yeah, the Blue Jays, even just as a team, and this is all fastballs, so it's not just four-seamers, but it's sinkers and it's cutters as well. A bottom five team in terms of slugging percentage, a bottom five team in terms of barrel rates, a bottom five, bottom 10 team, excuse me, in terms of batting average. Like, it's just kind of, it's the story of this Blue Jays offense. Like, they get on base at a pretty good clip. Like, they draw their walks at a good clip. They like strike out almost as little as any team in the league. Like, they don't swing and miss much at all. They actually make a pretty high amount of contact. It's just the quality of that contact that really hasn't been there, and that really shows up against fastballs. Blue Jays have the lowest average exit velocity of any team against fastballs this year. And yeah, you mentioned Springer's struggles against them. Turner's have been really interesting because in April, like, he actually was doing okay against fastballs. Like, I remember talking about it on a podcast in mid-April with you and being like, you know, coming into this year, we had questions about Justin Turner versus fastballs. And here he is kind of turning on them and, you know, hitting them to left. He had something like 8 extra base hits off heaters in April. It was like a really impressive start of the year for him. But then the league kind of adjusted to what he was doing and they started working him away a lot more often and kind of away from, you know, not giving him those pitches that he was trying to turn on and hit to his pull side. And then they started busting him in as well and kind of in and elevated. Like, I was talking to him about it this week and he was like, yeah, you know, I was kind of trying to adjust to the away stuff. And then I started getting beat in a little bit. He was really down on just how quick his plate appearances were when he went on that 0 for 30 stretch. 14 of those 30 hitless at bats were over 2 pitches or fewer. And that is like shocking for a Justin Turner, who is regularly among the league leaders in pitches per plate appearance. He has the most plate appearances of 10 pitches or more over the last decade in MLB. It's like him, Freddie Freeman, and like DJ LeMahieu up there, like good hitters up there with him. And he's like leading all of them. So this is a guy who sees a lot of pitches, and this is a guy with a great contact rate who fouls off a lot of stuff. That's why, like, when he broke out of that 0 for 30 with the double off of Garrett Crochet, he was telling me he was just as happy with like the 30th out of that 0 for 30 stretch, like the AB before he broke out of it, because he saw 10 pitches against Crochet, right? And because he fouled a bunch of them off. And even though he grounded out at the end of that at bat, he was like, this tells me I'm getting back to where I need to be because I'm seeing the ball, I'm getting my bat to it. And that was like hard stuff from Crochet. Like, that was like 99 elevated, 98 on the hands. Like, I don't need to tell anybody about how good Garrett Crochet's fastball was. And Justin Turner was like fouling off really tough pitches and putting fastballs in play. So that told him, like, okay, I'm getting back to where I need to be. It just kind of needs to turn very quickly for him now. Like, he needs to really build on this and start just providing some more extra base hits for this team. It's not going to be a ton of homers from him, but they're going to need a few more doubles out of Turner going forward, certainly.
Here's a question for you that I find myself wondering about just a little bit here. So if the Blue Jays' older hitters, like, let's say Kiermaier, Justin Turner, Springer to some extent would be in this group, of course, Daniel Vogelbach maybe, you have these veteran guys who have largely been struggling. If they are just not going to have the years that you wanted them to, do you have confidence that the Blue Jays are going to be able to move off of them quickly enough? And I don't, because when I look at the way that they've held on, and I get you have to be patient. Baseball is a sport with so many games, and it makes sense to be patient. It makes sense to trust the projections. And sometimes that can pay off. And I think that if there is a turnaround to be had here, the Blue Jays will find it because they've shown themselves to be a very patient team. But if there's not a turnaround to be found here, I wonder if they're sort of ruthless enough and if they're going to operate quickly enough to make that switch, or could they be caught holding on to someone like a Justin Turner for too long and giving him too many at-bats deep into the summer?
And so who are you making the switch for, though? Like a Stuart Baroa?
We all know, you know, where I stand on that guy. But let's say like a Spencer Horwitz for Vogelbach, for example. That would be one that we've talked about. Or Relvis when he's ready. You know, you're not going to call someone like a Relvis Martinez up and play him twice a week. But is there a possibility of, you know, getting Spencer Horwitz into the lineup 5-6 times a week, or even 4-5 times a week? I mean, I think that's achievable.
Yeah, you would need to open up DH at bats in a big way, and open up first base at bats as well by having Vladimir Guerrero Jr. play more DH for that to happen. So yeah, that would necessitate like a Justin Turner going out the door. You know, with Daniel Vogelbach, it's like that roster spot the Blue Jays just don't use anyway. Like Vogelbach plays once a week. Like it's one of the big reasons why he's actually still on this team is because he's able to work an approach and a plan when he's only playing once a week. You know, I think there's a lot of question as to whether a younger hitter would be able to do that, right? And would be able to kind of accept that role and still find a way to, you know, work a deep plate appearance and do something positive at the plate, even if you are making an out when it's like 3 to 4 plate appearances in the span of 7 days. You know, like Vogelbach is just good at that. You know, even his outs this year, he has typically seen a lot of pitches, and I think that, you know, there is faith that he's going to be better going forward. You've seen the Blue Jays giving him a bit more run lately. We'll see how that all plays out, but even if you just swapped Horwitz in there for Vogelbach, like there still isn't a clear path to playing time for Horwitz. And then with Martinez, obviously, like defensively, I don't know that the Blue Jays can trust him at the big league level right now. Like Ross, I think, was actually pretty direct when he talked about what they need to see from Aroldis Martinez. And one of the things was the ability to play second base at average or above average level, which, you know, you work that in reverse. That means he's not playing it at an average level. That means he's playing it at a below average level. And as we know, defense can cost you games at the, you know, in the majors. So I think for the Blue Jays, like, yeah, they do what you are describing. Like, they run this out with Justin Turner and hope that things turn around. They run this out with Kevin Kiermaier, who's been better since it came off the IL. He's got like a 400 OBP since it came off the IL. He's obviously still making huge impacts defensively and base running. You know, those are the things that are actually giving him like positive WAR totals, despite how he's hit this year, is because of what he's contributing defensively and with his legs. And then, like, honestly, if things don't go the Blue Jays' way and, you know, they're not in contention by the deadline, they're trying to move off of those guys. Like, Springer's another category, right? Because it's $25 million each of the next 2 years. But yeah, when he comes to like a Vogelbach, a Kiermaier, a Turner, you're trying to trade those guys. You're covering the freight to get some sort of better prospect return. And if you aren't able to trade them, then like once the deadline passes, you're just into release waivers territory because it's a sunk cost. And you want to free up the roster spot for your boy, Stuart Baroa.
Well, clearly none of those three have trade value now. Like, you know, no one's going to want to take on those guys at the money they're making. That's obvious.
Yeah, no, the Blue Jays would have to cover the freight for sure.
Yes.
So I think they would have value if the Blue Jays were like, yeah, we'll pay the salary. It's already sunk cost for us. Like, just give us some sort of value in return for this. Give us a lottery ticket, you know?
I don't think there's a lot of value there. I mean, maybe.
On their track records, right? And I think based off of for Kiermaier, certainly the contributions defensively and base running.
Yes.
And then for Turner, I think the offensive track record and also the clubhouse piece.
Yes.
For both those guys, really.
Yeah. For Vogelbach, you know, it's interesting because the Jays really value him in the clubhouse. I mean, the players like Vogelbach. Yes. So that's a factor here. You know, as the Blue Jays form this team, Daniel Vogelbach is a part of that team for what that's worth. So they're not going to just dismiss him as quickly as, you know, I might. But, you know, that's for them to decide. But I guess, you know, what I'm getting at here is on the spectrum between patience and then tinkering. I think the Blue Jays, if this is a situation that demands patience, I think the Blue Jays have the patience to reap rewards. If it's a situation that demands tinkering, I don't know that if they have that mode. They're not demonstrating it. You know, to some extent they are, but With something like Springer in leadoff, with something like Vogelback, like they're being very, 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 very patient. It's not working so far, and they continue to make that bet that patience will pay off. So I just find it interesting.
I think that, you know, it's kind of what I was getting at earlier. They look at the alternatives to those, because obviously they've had these discussions and obviously they've considered these things that you're submitting, and they look at the alternatives and they say, well, our best bet right now and our best possible upside right now is with sticking with what we're doing. If there was somebody at AAA who is a really sound defender and hitting like Aurelvis Martinez was, I think that that change would have been made quicker. And if the Vogelback rule was different and if there was more playing time for it, I think that that, you know, change for Vogelback to Spencer Horowitz likely would have been made by now. But because of the realities of the situations and the alternatives, I think the Blue Jays have decided that what we're doing right now, seeing this through, trying to get the regression that one would assume is coming, trying to get the turn to happen quickly, is their best bet.
Yeah. And like we've said so many times, if, you know, if Vladdy hits 12 homers this year, it doesn't matter. They're not going to win.
Right. Totally. We'll close the first half on this. Like the Blue Jays are getting to the decision point, you know, like I think that Ross is pretty clear about that when he met with the media. He was like, yeah, if you get halfway through the season and the hole is the same as it's been to this point, there's not a lot you can do. You know, like that, there was an admission there that like, if we have another quarter of the season, like our first quarter, we're going to have to be sellers. And I think that if the Blue Jays get to that point, they will be aggressive sellers. Like you're not going to see them holding on to guys like Kiermaier and Turner and Kikuchi no. and Garcia. But what I'm saying is like, they're not going to Colorado Rockies this, like, and they're not going to, you know, they're going to sell, like players are going to leave, like they are going to try to recoup whatever value that they can for anyone who is a pending free agent. That could include Danny Jansen as well. Like that's, you know, you're not going to see the Blue Jays hold through the deadline. Like I think that if they are out of it, or if their like playoff odds are still where they are right now, around 20%, below 20%, you're going to see all of those aforementioned names traded come the deadline.
Well, I largely agree with that, but I'd like to pick that up when we come back. I know we got to step away because I think there's a bit more sort of nuance to get to when it comes to what that could look like.
All right, let's step away and let's do just that on the other side of the break as we continue on At The Letters.
Listen to At The Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And Ben, before we took the break, you mentioned you want to add a bit of nuance to the decision making coming up for the Blue Jays over the next several weeks. So what do you got?
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit, because, you know, when you talk about, okay, the possibility of selling, which, you know, again, they're under 500 now. If they are under 500 at the end of July, they will sell. The decision point is July 30th. Probably want to be, you know, have a very clear sense of where that's heading a week or 10 days beforehand. I know for fans, you probably want a answer sooner. I think the way MLB front offices operate, they tend to wait until deadlines to make decisions so that they can gather all the information and then move from there. So I think that we will see this play out gradually. And if they are where they are now at the middle to end of July, then as you said, they will sell. And I think it's just worth saying for, you know, anyone who's out there listening and kind of wondering what scale that might kind of look like. To me, from everything I've been told, from everything, every conversation that I've had, this would not be a blow it up. They are trading everyone. Vladdy's gone. Bo's gone. Gosman's gone. That's not the direction that would be, you know, plan A. It would be, hey, it's Kikuchi, it's obviously Jimmy Garcia, and maybe some other veteran types, as we discussed going into the break there. And yeah, are they going to listen on a Vlad Jr. or a Bo Bichette? Sure, they would likely listen. They would be thorough. They are not going to just hang up the phone, but they would aim to compete in 2025. And Bo and Vlad are two players who can help them compete in 2025.
Yeah, it would be a retool, reset, reload, like whichever, whatever the vogue term is amongst front offices now for basically taking a step back for the rest of the year and then trying to win again in the ensuing season. That's what it would be. I feel like we talked about this last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. Like, you're just not going to see the Blue Jays go through another phase of like losing 90 to 100 games, quote unquote, purposefully for like 2 to 3 seasons. Like, you're not going to see a tank from this club as long as they are running the kind of payrolls that they are and that they ought to be, given the size of their market and the wealth of their ownership. Like, there's just, as long as you're spending $180, $190, $200 million on payroll, you can construct a roster that can compete for a third wildcard spot, like even just with short-term veteran type of deals. Like,
yeah, it's not that hard to make the playoffs in baseball. Like, that's the thing. 6 of 15 teams, like, your odds are pretty good if you're spending a lot and you have a good team. That's not a wild goal. Like, we're just talking about wild card here. We're not even talking about winning the division, although that also should be the goal.
Yeah, no, the Royals went out this winter and just like volume bought a bunch of vets on short-term deals, and they're like in the first wildcard spot right now. So
yeah,
like that's a very real approach that can work. So yeah, you're just not going to see the Blue Jays bottom out. And I agree with you, like, it would, you know, the retool, the reset would just be, yeah, anybody who is becoming a free agent this winter, likely out the door. But anybody who's still got some term and some controllability, probably staying, unless the like value in a trade is like slam dunk, can't say no. Absolutely, it makes a ton of sense to make this kind of move. Blue Jays just, they aren't in the business of making moves where they lose value. Like, there always has to be value for them there. Like, that's their belief, is that if we win the value in each and every transaction, all of those small wins will compound and add up over time, and we'll end up with a really good product. And you can agree or disagree with that approach, but I think for anybody who is still, you know, under contract or controllable through arbitration or pre-arb through 25-26, it's unlikely that you see those guys moved at this deadline if the Blue Jays are selling.
And just specifically on Vlad and Bo, like,
that's what I'm saying without saying it. Yeah.
Right. And they're the big names. And of course, you know, there's a lot of interest from fans in these guys, and there's interest in these guys from across the industry, as there has been at every moment since they've been prospects. Like, they're fascinating players, and big league executives, of course, are intrigued by these guys and what the future holds for them, good or bad. So, you know, just to make mention of a report from Mark Feinstein of MLB.com, who does great work, and he reported in a recent piece that there had been discussions around Bo and Vlad. And just to add, you know, onto that, of course, these are players who are going to have a lot of interest around the league, so expect that. But remember, too, there wasn't a mention of recent discussions. There wasn't a mention of serious discussions. And nothing that I've heard suggests there has been recent discussions around those guys or serious discussions around trading either one of those guys at any time in the last couple of years. So, you know, of course, teams inquired on Bo Bichette last offseason. That's no secret. I think that could happen again. But you got to remember, too, Bo Bichette right now, if you're a contending team, isn't exactly the most attractive player because he's not hitting. So that also contributes. And these guys make a lot of money. And Vlad Jr. plays a position where he's not just easily slotted into every lineup in the major league. So, yeah, of course, like the Padres, I could see AJ Preller going after Vlad Jr. I could see that call happening. But Vladdy doesn't fit on every team because he plays first base. Bo Bichette isn't hitting. Both of them make a ton of money. So what kind of prospects are you getting back? And if you're Ross Atkins, are you really going to trade these guys for like middling prospects and salary relief? No, you're going to hold on to them. You're going to hope that they rebound, and then you're going to trust that they help the team in 2025. Like, that to me all points in the direction of it's going to be so hard, even if they're technically open to the possibility. I really see it hard to get that deal past the finish line.
Yeah, and the other piece of it is that whenever like a team is appears vulnerable or is in a little bit of a downturn, executives and front offices elsewhere love nothing more than to increase the pressure on that team and to like increase the public drumbeat around, oh, that team's got to do something. Oh, they've got to move these guys. Like, oh, there's got to be pressure on them. Oh, their jobs are in jeopardy. Like, I think that there will be a lot of, you know, anonymous quotes like that coming out, you know, towards the deadline with reference to the Blue Jays as front offices in other markets try to just increase the intensity right. and the pressure on them, because that's the game that those guys are playing. And those guys are, you know, I'm talking about front offices here, are all incredibly competitive, and they're all honestly sharks. Like, they're all, you know, they love nothing more than to, like, when a team is going through it, to only make it worse on that team publicly. And it's kind of a reality of, like, the media market in Toronto, and just like the size of the population in Toronto, the size of the market and the amount of, like, outlets to cover the team and the amount of attention that's on it. Like, this is different than when, like, the Rays have a down year. Like, good luck putting pressure on the Rays front office when they get 7,000 people a night and you know, there's like one guy covering the team regularly. In the Toronto market, you can actually meaningfully increase that pressure, and this is some of the subterfuge. Like, these are some of the dark arts that the front offices like to utilize.
Right. And I'm not saying it's false that there have been discussions around, you know, Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette. But remember, too, like, I had a discussion with a few executives at the GM meetings last year, just about the volume of trade talks that happen. And some interesting sort of anecdotes came to light where it was just, yeah, we'll talk about dozens of players. And at one point, this executive brought up a box score on his phone and basically ran down the list and was like, yep, asked about him, tried to acquire him, never tried to acquire him. This guy, oh yeah, we were in on him at the draft. This guy, we tried to sign as a free agent. Like, teams are constantly trying to acquire players from each other. So again, if something gets serious, that's a different discussion. But I have no reason to believe, based on all the conversations that I've had, that the Blue Jays are seriously talking about trading Vlad Jr. or Bo Bichette anytime soon. That's not what I've heard.
I remember Mark Shapiro saying this over the offseason. I forget which avail it was in, or maybe it was the one at the end of the offseason, where it's, you know, all offseason long, it's, well, why don't the Blue Jays trade for this guy? Why don't they sign that guy? Why don't they ask about this guy? And Mark said something to the extent of, I'm paraphrasing, any idea that is coming out publicly, we have considered privately and we have pursued internally. Like, we have done that. Like, obviously, if this idea exists in the public realm and in the ether, that is obviously something that we have considered and decided is not for us, or pursued or tried to make happen and decided that we can't for one reason or another, right? Like, it's what, you know, like, yeah, why don't the Blue Jays just trade for Ryan McMahon? Like, he would be such a great fit for them at third base as a left-handed hitter, and, you know, on the deal that he's on, like, what a great piece for their lineup. Of course, he would be a great piece for the Blue Jays, and of course the Blue Jays have tried to acquire Ryan McMahon, but the Colorado Rockies don't want to trade him. They don't even want to talk to you about him. Like, they don't even want to engage on him. So you can't force that to happen. Like, you can't just make that happen if the other side isn't willing to play ball with you. So yeah, like, every, you know, you could pull up the roster resource for like whatever team in baseball, and I promise you the Blue Jays have had discussions internally and perhaps even conversations with that club about any player on there that would be a fit for them in terms of roster, contractually, their lineup, their competitive window, etc. Like, that has all happened.
And look, I mean, this is the industry we're in, and I love a good trade rumor, always have, and we probably will see them, right, as the summer progresses. But just for anyone listening now, like, the Blue Jays are going to try to compete in 2025, so just remember that. If they're bad, they will trade away players. They will trade away, you know, Jimmy and Yusei are really the ones who I think would go. Other guys might not move. And if they're good, they'll try to add, you know, which they're a long way from being good right now, but it could happen. If they turn it around, they get above 500, they will be trying to add. They will try to add to their bullpen eventually, and they will try to add a left-handed hitting position player who plays either corner outfield or second or third. That's kind of the summary. So, you know, there are a lot of, like, I think that's kind of the condensed version of it. But yeah, you're going to hear a lot more nuanced, you know, variations and hypotheticals around that in the next couple months.
Yeah, and you don't have to be any kind of expert to discern that, right? Like, sometimes the simple answer just is the answer. I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind, Ben and I, we cite the playoff odds all the time. And I know a lot of people kind of roll their eyes at the playoff odds. Like, what does that mean? Like, the game isn't played on paper, et cetera. Like, we cite these things because front offices use these things to inform their decision making. And we don't have access to the like internal proprietary playoff odds and projections and war calculations that a team like the Blue Jays or 29 other teams would have in-house. What we have access to are the publicly available ones. So this is like the best possible one that we have. And it's a good bet that the internal ones aren't too far off of what's publicly available. So like if the Blue Jays are around 20% on the Fangraphs playoff odds, well, okay, maybe the Blue Jays internal projections feel a bit better about some of their players just based off of some of the information that they have that isn't publicly available. Okay. But that wouldn't be the difference between like 20 and 50%. That'd be the difference between 20 and 25, you know, or 20 and 28. Right.
So yeah, I don't even think
even that's aggressive. High. Right. But yeah. What I'm trying to do is like paint the picture of like, even if you got the aggressive outcome there, it would still only be 25, 26, 27. So like still, if the Blue Jays are at 20% playoff odds via Fangraphs nearing the trade deadline, it's over. Forget about it. You know, like those playoff odds, like they are meaningful. They are important. They are used by front offices to dictate how they behave at the decision-making junctures of the season, such as the trade deadline, the off-season, spring training, etc. So that's why we cite those, and that's why it's actually worthwhile to keep an eye on where things reside in the Fangraphs playoff odds, because they can actually tell you a lot about what a team might do in the upcoming weeks and months.
Yeah, absolutely. As it should. And a very competitive division. You got a lot of teams ahead of you right now. The Jays fifth in the American League East, of course, fifth in playoff odds within their own division.
I do want to say this. It's like, and it's a bit of a left turn, but it's a little bit related. Like, because if the Blue Jays don't end up getting to the postseason, if they end up selling at the deadline, if 2024 is just a bit of a lost year, that is just such a tremendous waste of incredible starting pitching of what is, and I don't think it's hyperbolic to say, the best rotation in franchise history over the last couple of years. When you think about the stability, the production, the like Cy Young finalists that they have seemingly every single year, like the depth of their rotation, the fact that like right now they are running out four guys that you feel really, really confident in, and a fifth guy who just threw back-to-back seven innings, zero earned run outings. That is just not the case in 29 other markets. Like a lot of teams have question marks about the third guy in their rotation. Most teams have question marks about the fourth guy and then are kind of piecing it together with the fifth guy. For the Blue Jays to have four dudes who they like just have no reason to not have confidence in, and then now with Alek Manoah looking as good as he has, possibly like some real stability in the number five spot.
Foul tipped into the glove. Strike three. A screaming flex from Alek Manoah, who strikes out his seventh of the day in seven.
That is just so exceptional, so rare, so special. Like, we're going to look back on it 5 years from now and be like, man, the Blue Jays rotation in 23 and 24 was something else. Man, that was like underappreciated. You know, like Chris Bassitt throws seven scoreless against the White Sox on Wednesday night, and nobody talks about it. It's just like ho-hum. Because people are so desensitized to that because it happens so frequently that a guy in this rotation goes out and pitches seven scoreless.
Foul tipped into the glove, strike three. A trio of strikeouts for Chris Bassitt in the seventh. He's allowed no runs to the White Sox.
Or like pitches into the seventh, allowing only a run. Like this is just like normal and average for these guys. And I think that we shouldn't be so desensitized to it. It really, really is a special group. And if the Blue Jays don't take advantage of these couple of years, they're going to rue it, because they've like just special, you know, starting pitching like this, reliability like this, it does not come around often.
Yeah, it's really impressive. They deserve a ton of credit for doing their part. It's, you know, you imagine where this team would be if their starting rotation had not pitched this well, and it's a scary place. So they've done great. And just specifically to pick up on Manoah, I mean, he did it again. I mean, to pitch that well against the Rays, to be dealing in many of the same ways we talked about in his second start of the 2024 season, but just attacking in the strike zone, throwing three pitches consistently for strikes, getting ahead of hitters, putting them away. And then, of course, pitching with that kind of flair and conviction and emotion on the mound, coming off the mound after big strikeouts and enjoying it. I mean, this is as good as we've seen Alek Manoah since the end of the 2022 season. And he's right in step with the other guys to form 1 through 5, what's been a great starting rotation, and should give the Blue Jays confidence that, hey, if their hitting can get going at all, they actually have the arms to support that.
Yeah, you want to be cautious because it's only been 2 starts. So we'll see how it progresses from here. It's like 2 of the more encouraging performances that you could imagine from Manoah. Like I would say he actually had 4 pitches working his last time out against the Rays. Like it was sinker, 4-seamer, slider, and changeup.
Sure.
Right? Like that changeup so effective to lefties, the 4-seamer elevated, the sinker, to either side, the sliders away from righties. Like that sinker that's so like front hip to righties and in on the hands, using it against lefties as well, a whole bunch. Like it's just so impressive, like what he's doing right now. And as you said, the way he's commanding the zone, the way he's locating things, the confidence and conviction he has in his pitches, that if he just puts them in the zone, like their action, their movement, the stuff will take care of itself and produce weak contact outs and strikeouts when, you know, the slider has that like vertical bite and looks like a fastball for 55 feet and then just like drops off and, you know, makes hitters look foolish. Like you've seen guys like Edouard Julien, who's like one of the like most patient, disciplined dudes in the game, like, you know, putting up swords and dropping to a knee in his swings because he's so fooled by what Alek Manoah is throwing him. So that tells you like just the level that he's pitching at right now. I think it's as good as we've seen him sort of like, as you said, you know, mentally, psychologically, like competitively on the mound in a long time. And that's huge. And if he can continue to build off of this, or if he can just be honestly just, you know, even a notch below this going forward, it's a huge win for the Blue Jays. And I think it's a huge credit to how they've worked with him over the last, I don't know, 12 to 18 months, whatever this kind of odyssey has been like for him. And it's important to remember, like, this is not the first time they've done something like this. If this works out well for Manoah, you think about Yusei Kikuchi and the journey that he went through with the Blue Jays. You think about where he was at in 2022, and it was like, DFA him, release him, what a waste of money, he's terrible. And now he's just like super reliable and not walking anybody, and he's confident and his delivery is refined and he just looks spectacular on the mound every time out. You think about where he came from for the Blue Jays to get him here. You think about Jose Berríos and 2022 and just like, oh my goodness, what have the Blue Jays done by signing him to this contract? And all of a sudden he's falling apart, and how are they going to fix him? Like lefties are just, you know, crushing him to smithereens, and his 4-seamer is getting tattooed all over the yard. The slugging percentage numbers against his pitches are, you know, Barry Bonds-esque, and they work with him and they show faith in him and they give him grace and they like stick with him through it and help him get through it. That's 3 occasions now, if Manoah turns out, 3 occasions when they've had starting pitchers who had like some really, really low lows and looked to be really out of sorts on the mound, and they have found ways to get them back to not only what they were prior, but in some cases better than what they were prior. I mean, that's a huge credit to obviously, you know, Pete Walker and Jeff Ware and all those guys, but just the entire pitching group and the entire, you know, all the segments of the organization that work holistically around the athlete to get them to that point.
Well, in Manoah's case in particular, I mean, what a reversal. It's obviously the most recent, as you outlined, it's not by far from the only one, but to go from a guy who was really just, you know, lost last year. And some of that was health with the shoulder. Some of that was trying to get on the same page with the very organization that he pitches for and determining next steps. And, you know, clearly not everything was in alignment last year, but now just to be in this place mentally and physically and mechanically, that it's pretty wild. And it's, I guess, a reminder of how difficult baseball is, and how if a couple things get out of sync, then the results really will not be there. It's amazing that some guys can stay as consistent as they do, you know, knowing that it's such a difficult sport and that something small can throw players off to such a great extent. But credit to Manoah to being where he is right now.
Yeah, I think it's just a reminder of the patience and the grace that, you know, we all ought to have with players when they're struggling. Like, yes, everybody wants to win. Like, fans deserve to, you know, cheer for a winning team and have a good product on the field. But, you know, when a guy's going through it, I think it often, you know, makes sense to have a bit of kindness and to understand that they're not trying to struggle and that nobody wants to, like, you know, nobody wants to have outings like Nick Nastriani had, or whatever his name was, had, you know, the other night, right? And there's that, like, great shot in the dugout of Pedro Grifol, like, putting his hands on his shoulders and, like, having you know, a conversation with him after the Blue Jays just, like, boat raced him. And, you know, who knows what was said there, but it was probably something along the lines of, like, hey, we still believe in you, we're gonna help you with this, you're gonna make some adjustments, you're gonna be better going forward, you're not going anywhere, you're a part of our plans, like, here's how we're going to build from this. You know, like, those are the kind of conversations that happen behind the scenes all the time, and that you don't necessarily see when all you really see is, like, the, you know, 2 to 3 innings of a guy getting his teeth kicked in. Ben, you are in Detroit. You're going to watch 4 games of Blue Jays v. Tigers. What are your expectations from these games? What do you think you're going to see?
Well, I do think, you know, speaking of Manoah, I think that a pitcher like him can take advantage of this lineup. I think Kevin Gausman can as well, because this team isn't really hitting that well and hasn't all year. So, you know, I do think that despite the recent uptick from guys like Colt Keith and Wenzel Perez, and, you know, Riley Green's really been good all year, it's not a great offensive team. So the Jays pitching should have a chance to really continue doing what it's doing. And then on the other side of things, the Tigers can really pitch. So it might be a challenge for these Blue Jays hitters. But it's interesting, just more broadly within this division, I think we've thought of the American League Central as a bit of a doormat division for a while. But with the Royals taking a huge step forward this year, with the Tigers taking a step forward, it's more competitive. And that informs the whole picture for the wildcard mix as well. And it means trouble for the Blue Jays, because they are not competing for the American League East. They are not going to win the East this year. So if they are going to get in, they are going to be competing against teams like the Tigers and the Royals and the Twins.
Yeah, two things on that. Number one, I think that Wenzel Perez is, like, that's a name that maybe a lot of Blue Jays fans, like, aren't familiar with to this point. Yeah, he's in his first year in the big leagues, but I feel like they're going to be familiar with that name by the end of these 4 games. Like, he is so pesky, and he has been, like, such a good at bat for the Tigers.
Could you call him the Steward Baroa of the Tigers?
I'll leave that. he has been exceptional, and he's, like, making great contact quality, and he's fast, and he's working great plate appearances. Like, just as I was looking at the Tigers ahead of this series, and I started kind of diving in on him, I was like, oh, hey, like, this is kind of a dude. This is a guy for them. This is, like, you know, this is their Davis Schneider story, right? Like, this is a really good organizational story for them. So there's that. And then number two, yeah, you're bang on about, like, the Central being surprisingly competitive and the West being somewhat full of question marks right now, right? Like, the Rangers and Astros are both below 500. The Astros have been better lately. The Rangers have actually been pretty putrid lately, but, like, those are two teams that are below 500 but have, like, run differentials of, you know, -4 and -8. Like, they're not looking at -40 run differential like the Blue Jays are. So they probably feel good about their, like, prospects going forward. And then you mix in, like, a Rays who are hanging around, a Red Sox who are above 500 and have a +39 run differential. Obviously, they got to get healthy in a lot of regards, but, like, they have sustained despite the injury troubles that they've had. Twins kicking around, and then, like you said, you get surprises from the Royals and maybe the Tigers. We'll see. Like, they're on a bit of a downswing right now, but, you know, they can hang around. Like, there's just a lot of teams in this grouping for that third wild card spot. And the Blue Jays, in order to kind of sneak in to that third wild card spot, back in, perhaps, depending on your perspective, with something like 88, 89 wins like they did last year, not only are the Blue Jays going to have to play a whole lot better, going forward, but they're going to need some of these other teams to play a whole lot worse and drop out of this picture, because it really is just awfully crowded in there. And you have to bake in that one of the Yankees or Orioles are going to be in one of those top two spots. And right now the Royals are 32-19 with a plus 72 run differential. They ain't going away. They've won six in a row. So like they're right there, kind of with the Orioles, honestly, and with the Yankees in terms of the rate at which they're winning this year. And then Cleveland's been playing really well as well. So I guess it's a roundabout way of saying a lot of things have to go right for the Blue Jays going forward for them to be legitimate postseason contenders.
Yeah, they're like, they would have to hold off the Astros and then pass almost all of the Rangers, Tigers, Twins, Royals, Rays, and Red Sox if they're going to make it in. They could have one of those teams finish ahead of them, but they would have to pass the majority of those teams. I mean, they're, because the Jays, essentially, they're toward the very bottom of the American League. So they have to pass almost everyone, you know, or not almost everyone, but they have to pass a lot of teams if they're going to go from very bottom to, you know, toward the middle to top.
Yeah. Next month just has to be better than last month. Like I said, over the last 25 games, 9-16 with a negative 27 run differential for the Blue Jays. They scored 3.6 runs per game, allowed 4.7. Just can't do that for another 25 games. Can't do that for another month. Can't have another month without winning a series. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about Stuart Baroa a whole lot more than we already are, Ben, in the coming months.
Well, I look forward to that possibility, but to our listeners, I would understand if not.
Ben writes the podcast titles and the descriptions, and I expect Stuart Baroa's name to be reflected in both.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see. Hey, you know what? He will be in the description. Title, I don't know about that, but he'll be in the description.
I can't wait until that email populates in my inbox. All right, we're going to let Ben go and cover some games in Detroit. You can follow him, obviously, at sportsnet.ca and all the good work that he's going to be producing. My name's Arden Swelling. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thanks so much for their help, as always. And thanks to you for listening. Talk to you next time on At The Letters.